A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. The scratch test is one way to determine the relative hardness of minerals. By this test, ordinary silica sand proves to be harder than steel. Now, there's a lot of sand in road dust, and when it gets inside your car's engine, it scratches and wears out steel. Fight this kind of wear by using only Amoco's Premium Plus Permalube Motor Oil. This wonderful oil cleans as it lubricates, protects against both dirt and wear. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. President Truman flew over the 2 million drenched acres in Kansas and Missouri today. And in Washington, Congress completed action on the $25 million emergency flood relief bill. The Senate overrode its own appropriations committee, which had wanted to cut those funds back to $15 million and appropriate more if they were needed later. The president will sign that legislation immediately following his return to Washington tonight. The president didn't see so much water today. The flood is rolling down the Missouri toward St. Louis, washing out communities on the way. What he did see was a slimy inferno of upended houses, bedding on telephone poles, a tangle of wires, tracks, boxcars, and machinery, the carcasses of thousands of animal victims of the flood, oil slicks from burst tanks and pipes, which are still a fire hazard. Communities have seldom had to face as big a mopping-up job as the ebbing of this water leaves behind. And for a progress report on that cleanup job, let's hear now from Jim Burke in Kansas City.
In the wake of what might very well be the worst flood disaster ever to hit this country, Kansas City has made its initial start on the cleanup of the great mass of debris and silt which covers the Central Industrial District, Armourdale, and Argentine. To those of you who have never witnessed a flood and the resultant effects, let me tell you it's a sickening sight. Earlier this afternoon, we toured the devastated areas as far as we could get. We viewed the stockyard district from the 23rd Street Viaduct. All of the wooden stockyard pens are gone. The ramps which are used by the meat companies to transport livestock from rail sidings are seriously damaged. The area is a sea of filth and muck, which in depth must be at least 12 inches. The floodwaters have only receded completely in a few spots. Most of the land is still under some water, in places up to 8 feet. But the murky oil-filled streams are joining the Kaw and Missouri rivers rapidly. We talked to executives of the Cudahy packing plant as their workers were busily salvaging perishable goods from their buildings. One representative, when we asked about the damage might be to Cudahy, said, as a guess, and a long shot one at that, I'd say it's between $5.5 to $7 million. And that's only one industry in the West Bottoms, which represents the heart of Kansas City, the livestock interests. To the west of the viaduct is Swift and Company, around which is water at a height of about 7 feet. But the workers were on the job in boats trying to salvage what they could. Beyond Cudahy, we walked to the corner of Kansas and Berger. That's as far as we could get because of the water. We looked at this heartbreaking sight of ruined buildings, of submerged trailer trucks, of railroad boxcars overturned and smashed by the lashing currents of the Kaw, and we saw for the first time in our lives what disaster means, and this is it, in capital letters. As we turned to the north, we saw a lone pig standing on the rail tracks, dripping wet and looking as forlorn as anything you've ever seen. We were told he's been there for 2 days with no food. We asked a meat company employee if that pig was his. He said, nope, and if it were, I wouldn't want him. The stench from the bodies of dead animals and, who knows, human beings lying beneath the water was almost unbearable. We saw a man looking across the land of desolation, and we asked him what he thought. He said, what do I think? Well, I'll tell you. See that brick building about 400 yards from where we're standing? That's mine, or what's left of it. He was Edward C. Schock, owner of a truck transit company. At this same point, there used to be the Packers Station post office, a brick building. Where it is today? Gone. On down the raging Kaw. Will we get over this? If what we've seen while working during the flood is an example, I would say yes, emphatically. Disaster Corps Incorporated has been formed, a group of contractors, engineers, members of CIO and AFL, working at nominal rates to put the two Kansas cities back in repair. From a top-quality hill which overlooks another area of the West Bottoms, we saw men at work on rail tracks, observing and working where they could. Motorboats toured the inundated district as those who have suffered most viewed their places of business. Their attitude is grim. There must be a great deal of heartbreak, but you can't read it on their faces or hear it in their conversation. It's an attitude of, okay, it happened. This thing we can't understand, but we've got to build it back. And so they will. And now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
In Korea, the sixth truce conference has just begun, the agenda not yet complete so far as any official word is concerned, and unofficially, the question of the withdrawal of United Nations troops from the peninsula is thought to be holding up final agreement. The Chinese and North Koreans are reportedly insistent on that point. The Allied negotiators consider the question political, out of their hands, one to be settled in later discussions at UN headquarters. There is some question whether the Chinese consider themselves foreign troops, ostensibly in Korea as volunteers. Their top commander is not taking any personal part in the truce discussions. In Iran, Avril Haramon isn't getting much of any place in the first 2 days of his efforts to help bring about a settlement of the oil dispute. Haramon says, as President Truman's representative, he's trying to combine reason with enthusiasm, but all this combination has produced so far is continued insistence by the Iranian government on carrying out nationalization of the oil fields to the letter of the law. The British have not been best pleased at the efforts of the United States to take a hand in that argument. There's been no outright protest, but Britain has watched the efforts of U.S. Ambassador Grady in Iran and now Avril Haramon with what might be best described as pained but polite resignation. And there's now one other point of difference between British and American views on foreign policy. United States negotiations with Spain seem to have reached the point where our Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Forrest Sherman, has made specific requests of Generalissimo Franco in Madrid for the use of naval bases at Cartagena, Cadiz, El Ferrol, Santa Cruz de Tenerife, airfields at Barcelona, Madrid, Seville, possibly Valencia and Lugo. All this in the face of our official announcement that the British oppose any military alliance with Spain by any member of the Atlantic Alliance. The government today authorized automobile manufacturers to furnish a spare tire with new models, effective immediately. It also authorized small manufacturers to use more rubber. And in Congress, the administration put on a show of strength by winning a vote in the House to sustain the present rollback on live beef prices and to permit a 10% reduction in the price of other farm products selling above parity. The administration also turned back three attempts to curb price rollbacks. They picked up some help from city Republicans, and the coalition of Southern Democrats and Republicans collapsed when it came to the showdown. We return at this point to an aspect of the price control story we attempted with a notable lack of success to report last night, a congressman's recorded commentary in song. We pointed out last evening we had never heard a congressman sing on the radio. It seemed newsworthy, but our gadgets fell apart, and we still haven't heard a congressman sing on the radio. If the gadgets are working tonight, we will do so now, with an introduction by Joe Wershba in Washington.
Well, Don, as I started to say yesterday, the other day when Congress continued to weaken the price controls that President Truman was asking for, Congressman Louis Rabo, Michigan Democrat, warned his colleagues that if they continued that way, they might go down in history as the Horse Meat Congress. One enterprising restaurant owner who caters to congressmen here put up a big sign on his window offering free old gray mare filet mignon steaks to all members of the Horse Meat Congress. Congressman Rabo, you were saying something about changing the name of the Rivers and Harbors Bill.
Yes, you know, the Rivers and Harbors Bill has often been referred to in the press as the Pork Barrel Bill. Now, if there ever was pork, it's in this bill. It's before Congress now. The other day, there was a sort of a tie-up, I was informed, between the jewelry manufacturers and the meat people. Now, perhaps they're going to put gold rings in the bulls' noses.
Well, Congressman Rabo, I know you to have a reputation for being quite a songwriter, and your baritone still carries power. They tell me you've written a massive oratorio on the old gray mare. So, Maestro, if you will tune up your piano, we will now have the premiere of Congressman Louis Rabo's new composition, The Old Gray Mare.
Yeah, she's better than she used to be. The old gray mare, she's better than she used to be. Out of the stable now, onto the table now, the old gray mare, she's better than she used to be. A blue plate platter soon. A blue plate platter soon. A blue plate platter soon. Oh, the old gray mare, she's better than she used to be. Out of the stable now, onto the table now, the old gray mare, she's better than she used to be. A blue plate platter soon.
Thank you, Congressman Louis Rabo, who I'm sure wants to make it very clear he never wants to see horse meat on the table, just good red raw meat that's been cooked well and to get Congress on the ball. And now back to Don Hollenbeck in New York.
And we add our thanks to Congressman Rabo for his tuneful contribution to the debate on price controls, and we will have some spaghetti instead of the filet. And now we report a discordant note in Democratic politics. Senator Douglas of Illinois today took the unusual step of challenging President Truman's nomination of two federal judges from his state. The senator has asked the Chicago and Cook County Bar Associations to take a poll to decide which are better qualified, the judges recommended by Douglas or the men nominated by the president. Senator Douglas said he had followed the historic and time-honored practice under which the consent of the senator concerned is usually necessary and invited before the Senate confirms district judges. But of the three names he sent to the White House, only one was found acceptable, and the senator says he was not consulted on the substitutions. The bar associations have indicated they will accede to Senator Douglas's request. 7,000 lawyers will be polled. That poll will take about 1 week, and the Senate is not expected to get around to vote on the nominations until after the poll is completed. And that, of course, may have an effect on the vote in the Senate. In Los Angeles today, the singer Josephine Baker sat with two friends in the grill of the Biltmore Hotel. At the table next to them sat a man who made some audible and slurring remarks about Miss Baker's race. Pigmentation classifies her as a dark-skinned member of the human race as contrasted with the yellow, brown, and fair-skinned peoples of which the man at the adjoining table was a representative. This sort of insult is too commonly accepted in embarrassed silence for want of any satisfactory recourse, but Miss Baker has lived many years in Europe. She is unaccustomed to that kind of boorishness, and she took action. She called the police, who informed her that since they had not heard the remarks, they could do nothing. But they pointed out to Miss Baker that, under a Los Angeles statute, as a private citizen, she could make the arrest herself if they were standing by. And this Miss Josephine Baker did. The offender identified himself as Fred Harlan, resident of Dallas, Texas, and in the absence of any statute covering bad manners, he was booked on suspicion of drunkenness and of disturbing the peace. Later, he faced the charges in court. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
Out in Detroit, the new 1952 model cars are still in the laboratory stage, being tested very carefully. The exciting thing about most of these new cars is, of course, their new engines. Most of them will be high-compression jobs, engines which squeeze the gas just a little bit harder to get a lot more power out of every drop. Naturally, this calls for a special motor fuel like Amoco gas, a motor fuel that can stand squeezing without knocking. Amoco gas is completely different from ordinary gasoline because it's a pure petroleum product. There's nothing in it that can leave a metallic deposit. Its high anti-knock values are refined into the motor fuel, not added later. Every drop can burn, can be turned into smooth power with no knock, no detonation, no ping. The result? A cleaner engine, a smoother running engine, a more economical engine. And thanks to the clean-burning qualities of Amoco gas, an engine that will last a lot longer. But you don't have to have a high-compression engine to get these advantages. In any engine, new or old, Amoco gas is in a class by itself, far, far, far ahead of the field. Now here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
In Brussels today, a king was crowned in a world in which kings have rather gone out of fashion. Baudouin I, 20 years old, king of the Belgians and the African Congo. Brussels was en fête. Guns were exploded in Leopoldville in Africa. The new king succeeds his father, Leopold III, who abdicated yesterday after his reign of 17 years, interrupted by his exile after World War II. And that's the footnote to the day's news.
When you drive into an Amoco station, you'll see another pump beside the Amoco gas pump. It's the American gas pump. And if you're a user of regular gas, this is the gas for you. American gas is refined by the makers of Amoco gas. It's the leader in its field. And from Maine to Florida, it's known as the best of the regulars. For American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco sign of greater values. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.